It is true that the news that surrounds us, the news that emanates from our media, from the military, from economic interests, from religious institutions, from those who are political, is all bad. There just is no good news. And it's going to get far worse than it is now. And so the only appropriate response to all of this is to say, you know, these folks just aren't the solution. It's not going to make any difference if I change the color of the deck chairs on the Titanic. It's sinking. Any effort made to bail out a ship that has gashes of that magnitude is an absolute waste of time. It can't save the ship. But there are individuals who can be saved. You know, there's a life raft aboard this ship. It's called the Covenant. And so we present the first half of this program to speak just how wholly lost the world of militarism and politics and religion is, so that more and more people might abandon this ship of state and seek the life raft. The name on the raft, by the way, it's called the Ark of the Covenant. The conditions are marvelous there. It's true that it is a raft that most people that you know are going to be smirched. No, their politics has them having their God and their military in lockstep. Bless our troops. Singing Christmas carols to the soldiers. Telling them how much we appreciate the great service they are doing to us to provide for our liberty. There is a patriotic zeal of that just permeates the nation. And so if you abandon their sinking ship of state, they will smear you, slander you, accuse you of all sorts of awful things. Even though they too know that their ship is sinking. God's answer is indeed the Ark of the Covenant. Just as the Ark saved Noah's family, and the Ark of the Covenant saved God's chosen, His covenant, which provides a protective vessel to take us away from the institutions of man and to living with God in the promised land, is available to all who wish to enter it. But as is the case with every vessel, there's things that God's not going to allow on board. You know, if you have an inflatable life raft, for example, and you're in the middle of the Bering Sea and the storms are battering your ship, which no longer has propulsion, and you know you're going to sink. You know, the one thing that the captain is not going to allow you to jump on the life raft with is with razor blades and knives strapped all around, where you'll puncture the inflatable portion of the raft. It's not going to let you do that. He's not going to let you throw 1,000 pounds of gold into the raft, because that's your treasure. You should sink it. He's not going to let you stay aboard the raft if you are shrieking all sorts of propaganda that is not conducive to the other passenger's safety. The reality is that Yahweh has terms and conditions for those who join him on his raft. This raft is taking people away from the hell that is perpetrated on humanity by religion and politics, by militarism, by jaundiced economic schemes. So if God just simply said, yeah, all are welcome, I'll save everybody, just come aboard as you are, that raft would instantly be no safer, no better than the sinking ship that the rats had jumped off of, infected with all of the same horrible conditions. It is why God cannot allow those who are religious or political, militaristic, or jaundiced in their economic schemes aboard the Ark of the Covenant. He has not, he will not, he cannot. You're not welcome. Now, if you have been religious, even if you are religious, and you're willing to say, you know, I need to question my religion. I need to question, if I'm a Christian, I need to start questioning Paul. And ask myself how it would be remotely possible that a God would inspire someone to demean him and contradict him. And if I'm a Muslim, I need to ask myself, why was a man who was a rapist, who was a pedophile, who was incestuous, who was a mass murderer, who was a ruthless terrorist, how is it possible that a slave trader and a kidnapper, a thief and an avowed liar, was chosen to be the last messenger of God? Would I want to meet a God who would choose such a man? If you're a socialist secular humanist and you're opposed to religions because they have been deadly, why not consider the last 150 years and how your religious zeal has been the most deadly scheme ever perpetrated on humanity? Look what you have done through Stalin and Mao, through Pol Pot and others. And so if you are religious, if you are political, and you're willing to question what has guided your path up to this point, and when you find it faulty to discard it, then you are welcome to proceed. But not until you do. But once you're willing to abandon your political, your patriotic, your religious allegiances and walk away from them, the Ark of the Covenant, this raft from the sinking ship of state, this sinking ship of the Titanic that cannot be salvaged, this means to safety is available to you and to your family. But now you know that the first condition must be that you cannot bring the very things that caused the arrogance, that caused the Titanic to sink, you can't bring it aboard the raft. God's not going to allow you. He can't allow you. And so there are four other terms and conditions. One is, if you want on this raft, you have to trust its captain. There's not going to be a vine for power on this raft. There's not going to be the opportunity for some man or woman to stand up and say, I got a better idea. I don't want to go in this direction. I want to go in that direction. No, if you want to board this raft, then you've got to recognize that this raft is directed by Yahweh. Now, he's an interesting captain. He doesn't tell you you have to obey his orders. He just says you can't come aboard if you want to promote your own orders. You don't have to obey his agenda, but you do have to embrace it. And you cannot advocate your own agenda. Not on his raft. Now, mind you, he made the ocean in which you're floating. He made the land that you are cruising towards. He made the life that you are trying to save. Pretty knowledgeable guy at the helm. And that's why, if you want on this raft, you're going to trust and rely on him, and you're not going to be his rival and promote a religious or political or military coup to impose your own will. Not on his raft. Now, the third requirement for participating here is that Yahweh has a direction that he has laid out that enables flawed people. And because those who are jumping aboard the Ark of the Covenant are flawed, even once they let go of religion, I mean, I've let go of religion. That didn't make me perfect. Made me better, but not perfect. I discarded my political allegiances and my patriotism. Made me better. Didn't make me perfect. I'm still a flawed individual. And so God knows that this entire ark that he is providing, his life raft, is going to be filled with flawed individuals. So he says we're going to head in a direction that I have prepared that is going to make you perfect. And you've got to go with Yahweh in that direction. That direction is laid out as a path. He calls it his way. It's seven steps long. It requires us to meet with him seven times each year. Now, once again, you don't have to listen to what he has to say. You don't have to act upon and embrace the path that he has provided, which will prepare the occupants of this raft to be immortal, perfect, adopted into God's family, so that the crew of the raft is indeed the children of its captain, making it very similar to the to Noah's Ark. And this captain, whose goal is to enrich and to empower his crew, you do not have to join in this raft and go in the direction that he is taking its occupants, so that they are prepared to be saved not just from the sinking ship, but for all time. You don't need to do that. But if you're going to get aboard this ark, that's where we're all going. And if you don't want to go there, you're not welcome. Of course, this is an observant ark. This is an observant raft. Those who are on it don't jump into it because they believe that it will save them. They don't jump into it because they're desperate for salvation and this looks like possibly might be as good an option as any other. No, they're observant. If you want aboard this raft, you're going to read the owner's manual. You're going to consider all of the operating instructions. You're going to examine them. You're not welcome here if you're going to be a blathering idiot. The captain does not have interest in blathering idiots. This captain wants to explore, once they have saved the occupants of the ship, wants to explore not only the ocean and the surrounding islands and land masses and life on this planet. He wants to explore the universe. And he wants to take with him people who enjoy learning, who share common interests in this regard, who are not blathering idiots because they're observant. When we come to recognize that really every nation on Earth, in fact our whole planet, is no different than the Titanic, we're sinking. We have, through arrogance, poor manufacturing strategies, poor life-saving strategies, the arrogance of a captain through neglect, through bad, faulty design, we have damaged our ship of state to the point where it is no longer salvageable. It's taking in water at a rate way beyond the ability of the crew or participants to save the ship. In America, it's the case of debt. It's a case of trying to support too big a military. It's the case of trying to create an entitlement nation. And it's true of really every country in the world. We have sailed our ship of state into an iceberg that has gashed it beyond salvation. And so now the question is, are you going to remain patriotic to the bitter end? Or are you going to play on in the band, pretending that, you know, everything will be just fine? Or you're just going to go along with the flow because, you know, maybe somebody will come to rescue me? Or are you going to jump aboard a specially prepared life raft that the captain happens to be the architect of the entire universe? Are you going to be willing to leave your patriotism, your politics, your militarism behind, your religion behind? abandon it, walk away from it? Are you going to be willing to rely on this captain as opposed to yourself or to institutions that you have found endearing in the past? Are you going to look to him for your liberty as opposed to your military? Because it's a precondition. Are you willing to go where this captain is headed? A path that provides for your immortality, perfection, adoption, empowerment, and enrichment. Leaving behind the frailties of human mortality. Are you willing to go where he wants to go? Are you willing to be observant? Are you going to, is that something that you find interesting? Do you like to read? Do you like to study? Do you like to look at the manuscript that was given to us by the very creator of this life raft and the creator of the universe? Or would you rather play a video game? Would you rather watch television? Would you rather attend a sporting event? Do you have some other thing that you'd find more appealing? Or do you really want to study what he has offered? Because he's saying, only people I want aboard this life raft, the only people I'm going to allow aboard the life raft are those who are observant, who pay attention to what I have to say, who are interested in who I am and what I'm offering. If you're not interested, stay aboard the ship and see how it works out for you. And then lastly, he wants you to cut all ties. Symbolically, he wants you to slice that tethering line. I want you to cut all ties. You're set apart to me, or you can be set apart unto them. Your choice. And so that is the nature of what this life raft that Yahweh is offering. That's the nature of the sinking ship of state that the world is upon. So the one and only reliable means of escape, just as it was for Noah and his family. That's it. There is no other. God's testimony, not mine. You don't like this plan? Well, you know, it doesn't. I don't care if you're mad at me or not. Or as one emailer so eloquently put it in a letter to me this morning, liar, liar, pants on fire. I don't care what you think of me. I do not care. This is Yahweh's plan. He has articulated it. He has presented it. He has sworn to it. He has not only constructed this life raft for you, but he provides his propulsion. He provides its owner manual. He provides the conditions upon which you can board. They're not mine. They're his. But he is also the one who has warned you about staying aboard this ship, about continuing to sing patriotic songs as it sinks, about continuing to gather in prayer meetings and religious ceremonies, praising false gods. He's warned you about it, and he's invited you aboard his solution. So what are you going to do? Now, speaking of this Ark of the Covenant, in the next statement that we read in Yahweh's Torah, still from the first book of the Torah, Bereshith, which means in the beginning, been corrupted to Genesis as if this was a Greek book as opposed to one written in Hebrew. The next statement tells us that Abram moved to the mountains which served as the house of God. Now, when God says that this is the house of God, he's conveying a metaphor. This is symbolic language. Now, it's true that Yahweh's temple, which is a word that's equivalent to home and family in Hebrew, was and will once again be, not is now, but was and will once again be on Mount Moriah. And Zion, which is next to Mount Moriah, is the signpost along the way. Mount Moriah means to revere Yah, and Sion means signpost on the way to revering Yah, by the way. And that Yahweh, in the form of Yahusha, fulfilled the first four Moed Mikre in and around Moriah and Zion. And that he departed the last time and will return to the Mount of Olives, olives being symbolic of olive oil, which is symbolic of the Spirit because of the anointing and the medicinal, nutritious benefits, as well as the purest form of light in the ancient world, all associated with the olive. And, of course, the olive tree is the longest-lived tree in that part of the world, a tree that is rooted in the land, all extraordinarily important symbols. So this concept of the house of God is symbolic in this way. Yisrael, and particularly Jerusalem, which is the heart of the land, serves as a metaphor for living with God throughout eternity, camping out with Him in heaven. That's what it conveys. And so we find Abram moving to the mountains, which served as the house of God. And the reason for that is everything that Yah was going to do is going to be done right there. You know, ultimately, when Yahweh asks Abram to confirm that he's willing to trust and rely upon him, he takes him, guides him to Mount Moriah, where there's a dress rehearsal for Pesach Passover, portrayed right in our midst, so we understand the direct correlation between the covenant and the Mikre. And it's right there on Mount Moriah to revere Yah. We find that there exactly 40 Yobel or 2,000 years later, Yahweh, as the sacrificial lamb, makes another appearance, as the Passover lamb makes another appearance to save humankind. And so this is the house of God. This is the mountains that make Jerusalem special. This is where God chose to meet with and encounter humankind. It's the place where Yahweh has invited us to board his Ark of the Covenant. And it's the place where he made all of his promises regarding this covenant possible. Even the name of Jerusalem, which is the name of the city that is based around these mountains, it means the place from which teaching, from which directions and guidance regarding reconciliation flow. It's based on the same verb that Torah is based on. Yaron, the source from which teaching and guidance flow. And in this case, Shalem, which is reconciliation. It's Yahweh's city, Jerusalem. It sits on the mountains of Sion, which means signposts along the way. Olives, which is Zeth, which is the brilliant light and the anointing properties of the olive. And Moriah, which means to revere Yah. So that is where we find ourselves. And the passage reads, and from there, he, we're speaking of Abram, moved toward, proceeded and advanced forward towards the eternal Kadem, ancient and everlasting mountain range towards the house of God. Now, can Rome replace Jerusalem under this basis? Can Mecca replace Jerusalem on this basis? You know, there are seven hills that are famous for Rome. There are seven mountains that are famous for Mecca. The world's two biggest religions have moved away from the mountain range of the house of God to claim Mecca and Rome. But God is saying, no, that Abram moved towards the eternal, the everlasting Har mountain range of the house of God. It's in Jerusalem. If the center, the heart of your perspective of who God is and what he's offering, what he has done for us, is any place other than the mountains of Jerusalem, particularly Zion, the signposts along the way, Zeath Olives and its brilliant light, and Moriah, which means to revere Yah, then you are misguided. Then your compass is misaligned, that you're looking at the wrong map. Christian, Muslim. And from there, he, Abram, moved towards the eternal mountain range, towards the house of God. And he stretched out his house, the Beeth El Ohel, from the water, from the sea, and from the eternal ruin. And there he built an altar to Yahweh, and he called out, issuing invitation in Yahweh's personal and proper name. Bereshit 12:8. We have already been told that he has reached the promised land, that he is now in the realm of Yisrael, and that this realm is between the sea, which is the Mediterranean Sea on the west, and the area in the east that's called the eternal ruin, the place of lifelessness and destruction. And if you look to the east of Yisrael, what you find is Arabia, the birthplace of Islam, and Babylon, the birthplace of virtually every religion that has haunted this planet. And you see here, you have Abram building an altar, a place to remember, a place to acknowledge. The Beeth El Ohel, the house, the household, and this tent, the shelter of God. Stretching it out is symbolic of the wah in Yahweh's name, the tent peg. It's what you use. If you want to stretch out and enlarge a tent, you want to make it secure, you use the wah, the tent peg. And here you have Abram symbolized by one of the individuals standing in the midst of Yahweh's name, the hay and the wah. Stretching out, extending this tent, making it more secure, providing a dwelling place in the midst of these two places. And there he built an altar to Yahweh, a place to memorialize this relationship with Yahweh. So people would know it's there, a place where you could look and say, I appreciate what Yahweh is doing for us here, that we can be part of his family. We can live with him in this place. And then he called out, issuing an invitation. In whose name? In Yahweh's name. In Yahweh's personal and proper name. And that's how this concludes. He didn't build a church to Jesus. He didn't say, in God's name, amen. This Bana, this home that was established, this Bana, as a memorial, as a place to remember the Mizbeh to Yahweh, was designed to be an invitation, a summons to meet with, to read and to recite the word, to encounter Yahweh. And it was done in Yahweh's personal name, his Shem. It wasn't done in Abraham's name. There's no Abrahamic religion. Wasn't done in the name of Yehudim or Yisrael. It wasn't done in the name of Rome or Persia or Babylon or anything else. Wasn't done in the name of man. Was done in the name of Yahweh. Are you aware of any religion that invites people to be called out of the world, that summons them to encounter and meet Yahweh using his name? Are you aware of any? I'm not. The Roman Catholic Church has actually condemned the use of Yahweh, saying that it has no role, cannot be stated in any of their buildings. So it certainly isn't Christianity. Now, they're all fixated on a mythical guy named Jesus Christ. Certainly not Islam. They're all focused on Muhammad and his wannabe God Allah. Certainly isn't socialist secular humanism, because man has become God. No, there is none. Which helps to underscore this reality that if you want to live with God in His home, if you want to be part of His family, His Beth, then you need to do as Abram did, to call out in the name of Yahweh. That's God's one and only name. Abram knew it. Abram used it. So as you know, the operative word of the Torah, its primary teaching and message is Bereth, covenant. And the covenant, this Bereth, is based upon Beth, home and family. And that leads us to several relevant conclusions. The relationship that Yahweh wants to establish with His family is based upon home. It's based upon men and women coming together as husband and wife, and then conceiving children to become mother and father and to raise their children in a loving home, a place that is secure, a place that is nurturing, a place where there is teaching and guidance. This is what the covenant is about. It is a family-oriented relationship. And that is where Abram was, and that is why he called out to Yahweh in this way, in this place. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. When we recognize that the covenant is based upon Beth, family and home, and that the Bereth covenant is being offered in Yahweh's personal name, then we recognize this is the antithesis of religion. It's a relationship that Yahweh wants to establish with us, which is family-oriented. He wants to be our Father. He wants us to thrive, to grow in His home as His children. This thereby precludes the notion of worship. No sane father wants his children to bow down and venerate him. What's more, a home is a shelter. It's a place where a family is protected, kept safe, and secure. This is the very essence of the covenant. It's what it means to be Beth El, in the house of God. While we are living in the material realm, God wants us to pitch our tent next to His. He wants nothing more than for us to camp out together, now and forever. That's why Sukkah, which depicts camping out, represents the culmination of the seven mikrei, the called out invitations to meet with God. And consistent with camping, Yahweh's version of fun is spending time together, telling stories, sharing ideas, exploring the world around us, and reveling in each other's company. Throughout eternity, those who have chosen to board the Ark of the Covenant will break bread together, will sip some good wine, will enjoy the warmth and light of a roaring campfire, and we're going to ponder the majesty of life and the brilliance of the universe. There is lots to see, lots to enjoy, lots to do. Yahweh's Mikra of Sukkah, which is this invitation to be called out and meet with God of shelters, sometimes called tabernacles, is based exclusively on this premise, on this house of God, of pitching a tent and camping out with God in His home. It's a celebratory feast in which God and man come together and camp out, not only for 8 days each year, but also for 1,000 years, beginning on the Shabbat of Shelters in 2033, where the entire earth has been returned to the condition of the Garden of Eden. It's our return, Yah's entire family, to the conditions experienced in the Garden of Eden. The entire earth is rid of religious, political, and military establishments. And pollution, and man's pollution in particular, political and religious and military pollution, is all gone. And we get to camp out with God just as Adam and Chawa did some 6,000 years ago. It is what shelters is all about. It's what Sukkah speaks of, both each year and as part of a 1,000-year celebration between year 6,000 and year 7,000 Yah. So the Ohel Moed, the sheltered meeting place, is the name that Yahweh chose for his tabernacle during the Exodus. If you wanted to meet with God in his home, you wanted to camp out with him, if you wanted to come to know him, you went to the Ohel Moed, the sheltered meeting place. The Ohel is from Aal, which means to be clear, to shine, to reflect light. God's children reflect his light and become a beacon of clarity in a confused, dark world. And just as if you were in the Bering Sea and were jumping into the raft and would have a this survival suit, Yahweh has a survival suit. It's a garment of light that is provided by the set-apart spirit. It adorns us. It makes us look like God's children. Perfect. Brilliant. And it is very much like us wearing the Ohel Moed, this brilliant and shining, clear light that reflects God's nature, enabling us to not only be seen as perfect, because where there is light, there is no darkness, but us to be empowered as God's children. Now, it's interesting, of course, that if Abram had lived under the dominion of rabbis in the first century CE, during the time when Yahusha arrived at this same place, he would have been put to death for speaking Yahweh's name. So in this very same place that Abram was inviting the entire world to Yahweh by citing Yahweh's name, if anyone said that under the purview of the rabbis, they would be killed. So here's the man whom Yahweh established his covenant with, and the very man who knew Yahweh by name, who cited Yahweh's name, who invited us to Yahweh by name. That's something the religion of Judaism would never tolerate.